Okay, here we go. This is the Buddha's words on loving kindness. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Very good. Excellent. Okay, it's good to see you all again. Every now and again you go past the old Armadale Hospital to see where this place, this not really started off, but where we spent many, many years. It's much better to be able to see this, you know, wherever you are in the world. It's a great opportunity to be able to share this meditation for everybody. I got a lovely little video today from a fellow over, he's doing this work over in the Czech Republic, just to translate all these talks into Ukrainian and also Russian. Just they are very popular for people who are going through a lot of trauma in wartime Europe or the Eastern Europe. And it's wonderful to be able to be of service. This is not just for meditation. It's also made to be able to develop a spirituality which can have much more resilience. I've often thought that the mind is like just these bunch of strings, like guitar strings. If you stretch them, then when something falls on any one of those guitar strings, it makes a very loud sound, bing. But if they loosen up the tension in them and something falls on them, then it's got a very low pitch sound, boom. And if you have no tension on them at all, things can fall on those guitar strings and it makes no sound at all. That's just like when one relaxes, both physically and mentally, you found that when the things of life happen to you, you tend to be resilient. You don't react, hardly at all. And when people don't react, there's peace in your heart. And when there's peace in your heart, you don't react. The people who do react feel they can see their reaction so clearly that that may teach them how to relax more and have more resilience in life. There's many people, I'm not quite sure about each one of you, even though that there was no travel very much for us for a couple of years because of COVID. Nevertheless, I never caught COVID. And I often think, oh, why? Is it because I've got some natural immunity? Or is it just because you can relax so much that the body can heal itself so quickly and so efficiently? I usually prefer to assume the latter, because I love this meditation. I've seen it do some amazing things for you. But the most important thing is learning how to relax. Relax so deeply. Relax to the max, as I'm one of my sayings. And that's not just a joke. Sometimes you say these things like relax to the max, and people think, oh, it's just a jargon. But it's actually very powerful, even when you go to bed at night, to be able to just relax the whole body before you go to sleep. Then you sort of can really have a very good night's sleep. Even many years ago, when I gave a talk over in Sydney for a Buddhist psychologist conference, and one of the people there was saying that she actually made quite a lot of money just teaching people how to relax so fully with a body scan, starting with your feet and just moving right through the body, as a way of being able to sleep at night and curing insomnia. And she told me, I had no way of checking her, that 100% success rate with people who had difficulty sleeping at night. Not counting sheep, but just going through the body and relaxing the body as you sweep through it. And it's not that hard to be able to learn how to relax the body, because the mindfulness gives you feedback. You know what works, what doesn't work. And if you can practice like that, you find out that you soon have a sort of way of dealing with tensions in the body. In a couple of weeks' time, we're going to have a visit again from they call it over here in Perth, the Solaris Cancer Centre. And I've been going to see them for about 35 years. They come over to Bodhinyana Monastery once a year and just teach them just how to relax so deeply that, you know, they can get a lot of healing with the problem of cancer. So these are amazing things which happen, and you do like to share it even further afield. But one of the most important things is just learning just this technique of kindfulness, the mindfulness together with the kindness. And one of the similes which I use, I'm sure any of you who have been on one of my retreats have heard this, that is learning just the simile of the thousand-petaled lotus. Like you, this human being which I can see in front of me, the pictures of you, that you are like a lotus. But a lot of time people are all closed up, just like the closed lotus bud. But in the early morning, when the light and the warmth of the sun hit that lotus, then the warmth and the light of the sun allow that lotus to open up, layer of petals by layer of petals, one after the other. And of course, no one would ever expect, if you ever see a lotus closed up, inside that lotus is these beautiful petals, very fragrant and very colourful and very delicate. The deeper you go into that lotus, the more beautiful it seems. And that's each one of you. Sometimes you look at the people here, some are old, some are ugly, some are all sorts of people in front of you. I'm just being honest, you're not really ugly. But it's, you know, you're not sort of, you wouldn't like appear on the front page of some magazine At least I wouldn't anyway. That's what's really weird about this. Maybe some of you can answer this question for me. Because when I've just gone over to Indonesia, I just go over to many other countries, Sri Lanka and Phuket in Thailand, to teach. I can't understand why people keep stopping me to take photographs. I mean, honestly, and I saw one Indonesian there, Edie, that in Indonesia, it's satu dua tiga, click. Satu dua tiga, click. That's 1, 2, 3. And that, I know those words. I don't know the number 4 in Bahasa, but 1, 2, 3, I've heard that so many times.
Yes.
So anyway, so this is actually where, the, why do they want to take a picture of an old fat monk? I can't figure that one out. But nevertheless, they do. But there's something which is beautiful inside a human being. And that's what happens when you meditate. There's something gorgeous comes out which can actually shine through. And that's what happens in the meditation. When you start meditating, you begin with being aware of the body. And that's, the Buddha actually said that once. He said the best meditation, you go through the body first of all, to really relax it. It's, you know, what in the Pali, I'm going to just do Pali stuff, kaya pasadi, the tranquility of the body. And then the tranquility of the body means everything is loose and easy, no aches, no pains. And that's not a difficult thing to do. And then once that is nice and peaceful, then you can actually start going into the realm of the mind. I always mention this because often that people just go on to things like the breath meditation or do some mantra meditation or some other little words way too quickly. If your body is really relaxed, and on the way of relaxing your body, you develop your mindfulness and the kindness. You may have worked out already, if you haven't heard this before, that the mindfulness is like the light of the sun, and the kindness is the warmth of the sun. You do need both of those two together to be able to open up this body and mind. But if you practice like that, then soon the body becomes so relaxed, it's not a problem anymore. Nothing is really needs your attention anymore in your body. Everything is calm and stable and pleasant. So after a while, the body just vanishes. And you can actually start watching things like the breath. Or even before you even watch the breath, to understand what peace means. There's a lot of these concepts which we have in meditation, like peace, like stillness, which a lot of times people think they understand, but they don't really understand them. But once you start allowing them to come up and getting to know them more and more and more, they're really beautiful things which you can watch. Even just peace of mind, just peace. It's a beautiful thing to experience. And because it's so important, it means that you tend to develop peace, not just in your meditation, but peace in your home, peace in your community, peace in your family, at your work, wherever you go, whatever you do. Even today when I was in town, quite a lot of times when it's in an elevator or just walking down the street, and I'm a bit weird, I go around saying to people, good morning, good morning, good morning. And a lot of times people in cities don't do that, especially just over in Hay Street in Perth. But nevertheless, you say good morning and have a smile. I already look weird enough. I can get away with that. People don't think I'm oppressing them at all. They can actually say good morning back. And it's a beautiful thing just to say good morning to a person. Give them a bit of loving kindness. And the same when I'd meditate, I just say, give loving kindness to the whole body. And then that feels something which we can relax the situation. And then I go into the peace and get to know what peace feels like. Really get to know it. I know there are some connoisseurs, they know more about some types of music or more about sort of the water in the oceans, more about plants than I would ever know. But one thing I am, I would say I'm an expert at, is like peace. You just know how it feels. And it's, you know, really gorgeous. It's hugely attractive. It's not just something which is boring, but something which is delightful. And so I've learned over those years to notice the delight of peace. So what actually happens when you meditate, you start to be able to see a peace coming He said, "Ah, it's Piso, it's delightful, it's wonderful, it's gorgeous." And so, you go closer and closer to that peace. And like an example of that, just on Sunday when I was leaving Nolimara Centre, there was a message came through that there was a couple of Bollywood film stars wanting to visit our Nolimara Temple. And I don't know who they were, I don't even know their names. But they came, and because there was two Bollywood film stars going to arrive in our temple in Nolimara in 5 minutes, it's amazing just how many people stayed. Just to greet them, actually to see what they were like. But anyway, I gave them a quick blessing and then they left. They looked pretty ordinary to me anyway. But nevertheless, it's amazing, just something which was delightful to look at. Then people actually stayed, they wanted to see it. It's just like peace in your mind. Once you actually know what peace is like, it's much more beautiful than any Hollywood film star. So that meant that, it was Bollywood, so Indian. But nevertheless, that attracts you to something like peace. And so after a short while, when peace comes up, it just makes your meditation really joyful. And with peace, crikey, that's the most wonderful thing to be with. It's not something you can buy and purchase, it's just there. It's free. And it's always there for you whenever you turn to it. And so that peace becomes this wonderful experience in meditation. But it just doesn't stop there, because the peace becomes even more beautiful with what I call the silence of the mind. And the trouble is, when I do guided meditations, I'm honest about this, when I do the guided meditations, you get to experiencing the peace and the silence. When I get to the silence, it's really just, it's almost a conflict inside of me. I don't want to speak. I don't want to explain anymore because the silence is so gorgeous. It's like, why do I want to even speak and describe it? But nevertheless, I love it when each one of you can experience that silence in the mind. Not because you're holding it with, you know, tight fists, but it's just there. And it's, you're at ease with it. You rest with it. A lot of times people think these objects of meditation, whether it's the peace or the silence, you have to grab them and make them stay with you. But of course, that just goes against the grain for what peace and what silence is. This is not something which you have to hold. You can't hold it. It's just you let go of everything else. When everything else disappears, then this is all that's left. Just peace and stillness and all this thinking. All this thinking which, you know, we value when we were young, we value when we were scholars, we value when we, you know, have ideas. I've got a new idea, I just thought about it. And it's very rare I've heard new ideas, they're all old ideas recycled. But silence, silence is so much more beautiful. And as I think I've told you many times before, the greatest wisdoms and insights in all parts of life come after silence. It's like silence just refreshes the mind and just breaks that habit, the way we always think in just old ways. So it breaks that cycle so we can actually see it in a new way. We're actually innovative. And if once we're innovative, it's amazing just how that helps with our career, whether that's a career of building monasteries or a career of as an author, creative writer, working in the IT industry, or whatever you're working at, to be able to do it in a new, interesting way, a better way. It's improvement. We can only do that when we've been so silent that our mind gets empowered and it's not imprisoned by the old ways of doing things, the old ways of thinking things. So anyway, the silence becomes so beautiful. Even just its texture is very, very attractive. And you're just starting with this meditation. Then we get to things like, honestly, the breath comes up naturally after you're silent. You're silent for a few moments or minutes or whatever, and then you can experience your breathing. It's there. You don't go looking. I never go looking for my breath. It just always comes to me. And it's like a good old friend. And as soon as I meet my breath, this is talking in like analogies, it's like meeting a really dear old friend. We've had such wonderful times together in the past. So if I see my breath and I've got my eyes closed, meditating, peaceful, silent, when the breath comes up, wow, it's like meeting somebody I really care for and we spend a lot of time together. And it's not as if I'm afraid I have to hold it. It's almost like my breath holds me. Because again, like a good old friend, it won't let me go. No effort at all. And then you go even deeper into the meditations, delightful breaths, and these things which I call nimittas. Now, sometimes I was always a bit reticent of actually talking about things like nimittas, because they're very powerful parts of meditation. This is when you see beautiful lights in the mind. And I'm sure that many of you see those lights, because just you've been meditating for a long time, and you're getting really still. You're really good not to want them. But as we chanted earlier, to be content and easily satisfied, not proud and demanding in nature. So that means we're just happy just to be peaceful and see what comes up. We don't, and we're satisfied with just being peaceful. But then it gets silent, you see the breath and delightful breath. And from the delightful breath, that's where one gets these beautiful nimittas. And after those, you get jhanas and all sorts of amazing things in meditation. But each one of these, it's the surprising thing, and I want to emphasize this, is for each one of you, please know that there's happiness in meditation. Huge happiness is in meditation. You get so much joy in meditation. And sometimes people get afraid of that joy. They think, this can't be right, that I'm doing meditation and it's happy and it's blissful, you're having a great time. Won't I get attached to that? And I mentioned this before to you, it's from Pasadika Sutta. Yes, you will get attached to it, but anyone who gets attached to the deep meditations, you can only expect one of four things. Stream meaning once returning, non-returning, or arahat, full enlightenment. The four stages of enlightenment. This is what's supposed to happen. So this meditation becomes a very joyful, beautiful path. And if the path becomes so joyful and beautiful, please enjoy it. It's great for you. It means you love going to meditate and you look forward to the next time of meditating. Meditation is not like going to the dentist. It's not like doing something you have to do but you don't really like it. Meditation brings you so much happiness and joy. And that means afterwards when you come out of meditation, the people who see you will think, wow, what have you been doing? They can see the effects on you. And you're sort of happy. Sometimes it's like you're walking on air. Sometimes it's just, you can't help it, but just being sort of, well, okay, I wasn't going to say this, but like being high. You haven't taken any drugs. It's just a natural just buoyancy. It's the aftermath of deep meditation, good meditation. And the way the Buddha talked about it is like the five hindrances of wanting, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and remorse, and doubt are all gone, together with discontent and weariness. You know, in our world we do so much, we do get weary. It's a lovely word because, you know, you're asked to do so much. Sometimes it's not easy just to get to work, to get the train or get on the bus or get in the car and there's lots of traffic. Life is just wearisome. Maybe it's a sign I'm getting old, but nevertheless, even teaching can be wearisome. But when you start to get nice meditation, you don't have any weariness at all. You're just like full of energy and you're enjoying what you're doing. And it's also that you don't get this terrible discontent. Seems like whatever happens to you doesn't matter. Okay, it's okay, never mind. It's just your negativity. Your resilience, it just improves enormously. So all of these stuff which comes out of deep meditation, it's positive, positive, positive all the way. And the last thing with meditation is no dangers, it's all for free. I did mention earlier, and I think you know this one too, that the only danger of meditation, and it is a danger, is you're likely to lose your hair. Renounce, become a monk or a nun. Well, that's not a bad thing to do. Have enormous fun being a monk or a nun. Anyway, Chris has hardly got any hair at all left in Osaka, so you've got nothing to lose, Chris. So.
No, I haven't. I'm happy to be here, I must say.
Great. So that happiness, that's something which is really weird. It's actually to get the spiritual depth. You need not to be afraid of happiness. And that's like a profound thing which I've said. A lot of time when happiness comes, you think, oh, something must be wrong here. I'm enjoying this. You don't pay for anything, you just sit there, you don't take anything, it just comes into you from inside. But a lot of times people are afraid of it. They think, no, this can't be right, I'm getting really happy. If it comes, please welcome it. It's part of the meditation path, and really big happiness is as well. And totally positive, great for your health, great for your happiness, great for your harmony. Many other people who you meet will also share their happiness. Look, whatever you do, whoever you are, we all meet so many people throughout the day, and you'll share that, you share who you are. A lot of time you don't need to be a teacher, just be a peaceful, beautiful, happy person, and other people benefit from that enormously. And that's your way of giving back to the world, even if you don't even speak. It's just your presence inspires people. So anyhow, I know these days that I do talk too much, even though it's just, much of the other body, you just have to walk slowly, just walking up the hill. But my mouth, it's one thing which I've noticed over so many years. As you get older, your arms get weak, your legs get weak, sometimes you need to wear glasses, you can't hear that well. But there's one part of the body which gets stronger and stronger and stronger the older you are, and that's your mouth. So my mouth has got lots of energy. So anyway, I'm going to shut up now, and we can start some meditation. So are you okay to do some meditation now?
Of course we are, Ajahn. That would be wonderful.
Okay, so I do a guided meditation for the first bit, and then when I get really silent, then inside myself I can't speak much more, so what I usually do, I'll be quiet, and then I'll give you a come-out message just 1 or 2 minutes before the meditation ends. Okay, so here we go. So please, if you can, get yourself as comfortable as possible. And this is the start of Kaya Prasadi, the tranquility of your body. I don't care which posture you use, but make a posture which is comfortable, strong, doesn't send you asleep, but doesn't give you any aches or pains either. Got myself sitting reasonably comfortable. I'm going to just adjust my butt and my back because I like sitting up straight. That feels much better. And then we're going to start with kindfulness on your feet, first of all. Can you experience any sensations on your feet? I always like to wear bare feet. Don't like socks, especially when I'm meditating, because I like to feel the carpet underneath the soles of my feet. I like to feel my toes, my uppers, the heels of my feet. If you look for sensations, you'll be able to find them there. And every time you meditate like this, you get more and more aware of things which most people aren't aware of at all. For me, it's just the feelings in my feet. That's called mindfulness. But then I add the kindness. It's like wishing every part of my feet to be happy and well, to be relaxed to the max. And I discover that as I'm aware and I give that kindness, I can relax my feet more deeply than when I started. They feel much better. It's like you can soak your feet in hot water sometimes, and they just really relax. It feels good, it's healthy, and it's kind to your body. And I go up to my ankles. There's a special feeling for the ankles. It's different than the knee feeling, different from the wrist or elbow feeling. All these joints, you can know them. They've got a different sensation to them. I check my ankles. I can feel them now. Just relax them. Give them kindness. So, because I'm going up my body, I'm not just being aware, I'm being kind. And you also understand what kindness is. Kindness, you know it because it relaxes everything. It changes the perception, the feeling in my, now going up to my calf muscles. It changes the feeling there to being more open, more at ease, way more comfortable. And I know from these little exercises how to be kind to others. Kindness to others makes them feel less afraid of you, makes you feel more at ease. Even you practice that with animals in the forest, whether it's with kangaroos or whatever cause in this forest, you're kind to them, the birds, the ants, and you're kind to them. You can see they're relaxed, they're not afraid. Especially with the kangaroos, you see that when you're kind to them, they just carry on munching the grass and they just basically just trust you so much they don't even lift up their head. And then I go further up to my knees. Some of you may have injuries which cause knee pain. If that happens, if you feel knee pain for any reason, you may have fallen off a ladder or fallen off a bike. Just know those feelings. Just don't be afraid of them. And just be kind to them. It's like the mind is smiling at those feelings. Look, I care for you, knees. I'm sorry that you hurt. And you're sincere about this. You don't make up these ideas. You actually live them. So you have this kindness towards your knees, and you know what kindness is if you practice this way for a long time. And that kindness relaxes everything there. My knees are usually pretty healthy, but now they're just, I feel like they're tingling. It's a special sensation of just like happy knees. That's how they feel. Actually, I don't want to leave them. They're a very pleasant feeling. But then I go up to my thighs, big muscles. They usually don't cause me any trouble, I don't do that much exercise. But then I can just feel them all. And they feel at ease too. And I wait until I'm aware enough, I can feel a special kind of feeling, a delightful feeling of relaxation. If you do it properly, it does feel pleasurable. I feel pleasure in my thigh muscles. It's weird, but that's what I'm experiencing. And then we go further up to the buttocks. And as I feel my buttocks, they're different from the rest of the body because there's pressure on them, me sitting on a chair. But nevertheless, I try and care for the buttock muscles as best I can, trying to even out the pressure. At least I care. That means the buttock muscles respond with a deeper relaxation. And even, I can feel a kind of tingling in there. A tingling of just as comfortable as they can possibly be. And then I go to my waist. Feel the waist. If I need to move it, I'll move it, but it feels okay now. And relax to the max. Because I know if I don't do this properly during the meditation, I'll get distracted by a pain or an ache. And then I go inside my body. I think you can understand as we're doing this The body relaxes so well. It's easy to go to sleep if you need to. But we're in the posture now, don't go to sleep, just let the lower part of the body, which we've relaxed, just kind of disappear into comfort, so it doesn't cause any trouble for you. But then I go up my body, usually going through the digestive tracts. I don't really know what's what, where's where, but I just scan upwards. And as I scan upwards, if I meet any part of my inner part of my body, the torso, any part which feels it's tense, tight, not fully relaxed, I know this area now, I've been doing this a long time, so I can see if there's any problem anywhere. And if there is, I stop there. And I just give so much kindness, so much care with mindfulness and kindness. And I know that relaxes things. Any tummy ache can very easily be dealt with. Any stomach ache, you can feel it, relax it. And over the years, you can make it disappear. It's amazing just how well this works. And I go further up to my lungs. I always have a little bit of hay fever, or maybe not hay fever now, but some sort of allergies. My father suffered terribly from asthma. I go to my lungs. I'm kind to them. I'm never going to force you. I'm just going to care for you, lungs. That makes my breathing nice and smooth and easy. Go up to my heart. Just recognize, be kind. And then go up to my shoulders. If there's anything else which I've missed, because my organs in the back are usually pretty easygoing and pretty happy. But if you have to pause anywhere, please stay there for a little while, give a lot of kindness. And a lot of times you find that allows some healing to happen if there's any injury or any pain there, any tension. We relax it. And you go to your shoulder muscles. So I'm doing this, it's quite involuntary. I did a big yawn. So my body needed to do that. So I go to my shoulder muscles and loosen any tension there. You get to know your body. You get to know if it's tense. You don't need somebody else to tell you. It's your body, you have mindfulness. And the kindness learns how to relax all those muscles in your shoulders. Sometimes it's trial and error, but soon you learn. And you go down your shoulders, past the forearms to the elbows. I can feel my elbows now. They're fine. To the forearms, the wrists, and the hands. The fingers are pretty easy to feel. So many nerve endings in each one of them. So I just ask the fingers, are you happy there? Are you comfortable? Today my fingers say no. They want to be adjusted, so I'm doing that. Wow, that feels so much better. Just people respond to your kindness, just asking them, how are you? And doing something about it, if you know, there's something you can do to improve their state of being. That's what I do to parts of my body, my fingers. I ask them, how are you? I really, truly care. And they let me know and I respond. And now my fingers of my hands feel just very comfortable, very cozy down there. Then I go back out to my shoulders and my neck. I can feel sensations in my neck. It's quite tight there. So what I do is, yeah, I usually just move my head backwards and forwards just to make sure that it's relaxed as much as I can. And then I leave my head balanced in what, by moving backwards and forwards, I can discover the most comfortable position for my head. Once it's there, it's like my neck says, thank you. And then in my head, I go to the... I love going to the sensations around my eyes, around my nose and my mouth, making sure they're all relaxed. The moment that my muscles around my eyes aren't relaxed enough, I just pause there a little bit. It's better. It's how I feel. They're more at ease, more open, less stressed, less squashed. I don't often do this, but today I feel it's good. And then I know it's very hard to relax the brain. But some of you have been thinking a lot today. So you might try just focusing on an area right in the middle between your ears, a couple of inches behind your eyes, where your brain is located. You're not supposed to be able to experience sensations in the brain, but just imagine you can. And imagine your poor brain been working hard. Imagine just that you've got a hinge on one side of your skull, and the other side of the skull, you can lift it up and take the brain out and put it in a nice comfortable basket with a very lovely cushion or mattress and a little duvet and a pillow, and say to your brain, brain, you don't have to work now. You take a rest. Put your brain to bed for half an hour. It deserves it. So you don't need to make any decisions. You don't need to take notes. Your brain can have a rest. And then you go back to your body. My whole body now, from head to toe, it actually does feel really at ease. It feels good. I stay being aware of that feeling of a relaxed body. Because what happens next? Here it comes. I feel the delightful feeling, it's a pleasure of relaxation. I thought first of all this was indulgence, but when I am aware, mindful of the delight of a relaxed body, with no tension anywhere, that delight takes relaxation to an even deeper level. My body really relaxes. I can feel it. It's not an imagination, it's real, it's gorgeous. And then I turn to my mind. Peace. How peaceful am I right now? Sometimes I ask people to give it a number, because people in the West like numbers. 1 means really peaceful, 10 means agitated. Just to know, not to judge. Just to know, what makes you more peaceful? What does peace feel like? It's hard to contain it in a description of words. But you can know it. Know what peace is. And what makes it deeper, fuller. What makes it glisten. And I certainly know the enemy of peace, which is past and future. It's in that past and future is all the problems, all the worries, all the busyness. If I remain in this moment, then peace just grows. I feel the delight of the peace in the present moment. Once I notice the delight, I don't have to hold my attention there. I don't need to focus. Just the delight of peace right now holds me here comfortably. I don't want to go anywhere. I'm content, easily satisfied. I don't know if that's really true, easily satisfied. It's just too joyful to be. Say easily satisfied, it just holds me. Warm, comfortable, safe, peace. Stay with that peace, get to know her even more deeply than you've ever known before. When you get to know each other and get to be value one another, then that peace gets stronger and stays. The mind doesn't want to leave it. That's when it gets full. And it happens automatically as you get more and more powerfully peaceful. You notice silence also comes. You don't need to think. You don't need to work it out. You don't need to take notes. You don't need to make plans. You're just silent. This is almost good enough. If you want to notice your breathing, often it just comes to you. And it's just so easy to observe. It's the only thing left. Everything else has gone. It's watching this moment of breath silently, peacefully, with no effort. A good friend needs no effort to stay with. And please excuse me, I can't speak anymore. Thank you. it is getting close to the end of the meditation period. How peaceful are you now? And how delightful is peace? Notice its quality. It feels health-giving, free, and deeply spiritual. Beautiful. And how does your body feel? Did you start to become aware of your body again? See, so much of it, if not all of it, has had the opportunity to relax fully. Feel so at rest, so reinvigorated, it's like recharging your battery. I so much more prefer ringing the gong like that than banging it. Banging it seems so violent after a nice meditation. Okay, that's nice. Thank you for letting me join in. Half an hour of peace.
Wonderful and very peaceful, Ajahn. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Now, forget exactly what happens next. It used to be that you ask for questions or subjects for me to talk on.
Well, we're most welcome. I'm sure people would love to ask questions.
Great. Ask away.
I see that Nikki's already got a hand waving in the sky there. So, Nikki, would you like to unmute and ask your question to Ajahn?
I would. Satisfy the words. Thank you, Ajahn.
My pleasure, I mean that.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you that question like you said. Do you remember me? That's funny because I saw you in Bristol. That's long ago in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that wasn't my question. My question is, when I'm meditating, and when, for instance, when you do the brain.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to find words, isn't it, after meditation?
Yes.
I wanted to know, because I go into a bit of a conflict of, do I experience it as I'm from within or an observer? I swing from both. Is that normal?
Everything's normal because it happens. So we don't tend to judge anything. So if you want to do that, it's just an interesting way of encouraging your poor brain to have a bit of peace and quiet. Of course, the brain is still working, it's only like a metaphor. But even just doing through that visualization, then after a while it just helps, just to calm the brain down.
So when you do it, Ajahn? Are you seeing yourself do it, or is it you're imagining it from within?
I'm imagining it. Imagining there's a... Because I'm a guy and I've made so many boxes and stuff. I imagine there's a little hinge on this side over here, and I lift the head up and take the brain out and put it in a nice, safe, warm place. I forgot to tell you that now, please, at the end of the meditation, please put your brain back in. Don't leave it out.
Thank you, Ajahn.
No
Thank
trouble.
Thank you.
No trouble.
Ajahn Pasundu, would you like to unmute and ask yourself a question? Would you like to unmute and ask Ajahn the question up there?
Ajahn?
Ah, yeah, hi.
My question is about walking meditation.
Yes.
Ajahn, how to understand difference between concentration and drowsiness? I mean samadhi and drowsiness of walking meditation. What are its signs? Can you please explain?
When you start to do the walking meditation, it's very hard to describe that on a video. But first of all, it's just a way of focusing your mindfulness on just the walking and, you know, all the muscles which move when your feet move. So when I start walking meditation, I usually put my gaze just a body length in front of me with my eyes open, which is important because otherwise you may hit something or you may tread on something. I don't look to the left or look to the right, keep the eyes open. And I can, right now even, Pasundu, don't even look at your feet, but can you lift your left foot up? You can feel it.
Sorry. Yeah, okay.
So you can feel all those sensations of lifting up a foot, and you move it forward, and you can feel those sensations, and you put it down again. And as you're walking, the longer you walk, the more you can actually pick up. You know those feelings of moving. And what happens next is actually so much goes on there that you start to focus naturally, not because you have to, just on just the feelings of feet moving. And they soon get very, very interested in this. It's quite a pleasant sensation. And then you get a degree of samadhi, which I remember getting, that as I was doing walking meditation, this was in Bangkok many years ago, that I heard this sound like it was a long distance away, like miles away. And it was my name. Now, Ajahn Brahm is, you know, the name I'm known as now, but the real name is Brahma Wangso. And I heard this sound like from a really long distance, Brahma Wangso, Brahma Wangso. And I thought this was really weird, because it felt so distant from me. But then I just paid attention to it instead of my feet walking, and I found out it was another mug was shouting in my ear hole. It was shouting there because I was late. I should have gone to some appointment and he was sent to come and get me. But of course he knew what meditation was, so you know, he knew he had to be right in my ear hole and just shout. And I could only just hear him. But I'm grateful for that because it showed me just how quiet you can get in your meditation. Even walking meditation. And once you get interested in like the movement of your feet, you don't get sloth and torpor. It's fascinating. Sometimes you have little things you ask people doing walking meditation. When you walk, which part of your foot leaves the floor first? Which part leaves last? When the foot moves up, does it go straight up? Or does it go forward a little bit, or back a little bit? And when it moves forward, how does it move forward? My feet, they move in an arc. And then when it goes down onto the floor, which part meets the floor first, which last? You can feel the transfer of the weight from one foot to another. It's fascinating. And it gets joyful. You have a lot of fun. When is joy? There's no sloth and torpor. And anyhow, I think you may find it on the web somewhere. When I was in Penang, that they said, well, you know, that sometimes they're a bit dull. So I introduced Australian walking meditation. And that is, you don't walk. You stand with, you know, both feet together, and you put your hands in this position, and you jump like a kangaroo. Kangaroo walking meditation. And as soon as I did that, people got their cameras out and they started videoing it. So it's on the YouTube somewhere, Ajahn Brahm kangaroo walking meditation. But I did that, and that overcomes sloth and torpor very quickly. You bounce along. And I do that because it's fine, it's okay to have some fun in meditation. So please, you can innovate and see if you can do something which was original in walking meditation. Make it a little bit fun. That overcomes the sort of the tiredness.
Thank you, Carson.
Thank you.
Very good.
Sky has been waiting patiently. Sky, would you like to unmute?
Yes, thank you, Chris.
You're welcome.
Hello, Ajahn.
Hi. Hi.
Hi. You're adorable. I just think you're great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Good.
I have a simple question. I heard a great explanation on a video yesterday between holding on to something and grasping.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, I like this. Instead of grasping, you can still hold without grasping, you know? Because I tend to be a little grasper here and there. But I like holding on to joy and things that I used to love in the world and stuff. But I have a conflict of the difference between passion and dispassion. Like, I was in the performing arts set, and I was passionate about it all my life.
Yeah.
But because I don't want to come back, well, I'm probably going to have to, but certainly didn't become a stream winner yet, but I'm leery of wanting and desiring and becoming. I don't want to even be in the same family again. And so I'd just like you to cover a little hint on the difference between keeping a healthy holding desire and losing passion and becoming too dispassionate.
Mm.
Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. I have many passions in my life. You know, things you really work hard for. And, you know, trying to get, you know, equity in Buddhist monasteries, you know, between nuns and monks. And it really inspires me when, you know, you get a young monk or a nun gives a really, really good talk, even better talk than I give. Yes, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. You're passionate about all the jobs you do, teaching others. And I just mentioned this just to our Thai group here in Perth a couple of days ago, because my birthday coming up soon. And I said, if you want to give me a birthday present, one which I will really just appreciate, just you go and meditate and get some nice, peaceful, deep meditations, and then let me know. That's a wonderful birthday present when you see all the sort of the people you've helped, you've advised, you've encouraged, when, you know, they start to, you know, get the bliss of meditation and the deeps of insights of meditation. That's, you know, what you enjoy more than anything else. I'm passionate about that. But then again, when it's time to meditate, you let that all go. It's like this monastery where I live most of the time, Bodhinyana Monastery. I'm supposed to be the head monk, the boss monk, as Chris said. I'm supposed to be the abbot, but I always have Monday mornings off. What I mean by that is, Monday morning I've been busy working in town, in our city centre. I come to monastery on Monday, and in the morning if some monk said, oh, the plumbing is broken, or someone needs some help, or whatever, I said, why are you asking me? I'm not the abbot today. I take some time off. And what happens is something really amazing. When you take that time off, if you possibly can, you look at the place where you live and with totally different eyes. I don't know your house where you live, but if you kind of own that house, you can't appreciate it. If I think I own this monastery, I've got so many responsibilities and duties, it'll just drive you crazy. And other people come to see this monastery and they say, wow, what a beautiful monastery that is. It's so tranquil, it's so beautiful and peaceful. And I say, are you joking? This is my workplace. And I realize I was wrong. And I sort of decided at least once, no, morning, whenever, once a week anyway, I try my best just to be a visitor, not an owner. And if you're a visitor, an owner, you can see things in a totally different way. So
that's
what?
That's a very good answer.
Yeah. So you're passionate most days of the week, but one morning a week, just be a visitor.
Okay. Thank you, Ajahn.
So,
thank you, Scott.
So in other words, just take a break from obligations, duties, desires, things that you must accomplish to stay in the world and function without despair and aggravation and perturbedness. Yeah. I like that.
Great. Yay. Me too. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you, Scott. And thank you, John. Melanie and Marion in France have been waiting. Melanie and Marion, would you like to unmute?
Hello. I have a question about intermediate states. I've heard that when his body dies, there's an intermediate state before rebirth. Is it the same thing as ghost realm? And is it like similar to the human realms that you have contacts with other ghosts and interactions and feelings and all that kind of stuff? Thank you.
Yeah, it's very similar. It's a nice question. Very few people ask a question like that. But it's true. When a person dies, you know, they have the experience of floating out of their body or being outside of their body, and they can see and hear what's being said and what's being done. And what the Buddha called it, a mind-made body. Just, you know, with just to be able to see, hear, smell, taste, touch, to know things. Maybe not as clear as when you are alive, but at least, you know, pain-free. And usually you stay in that realm for a while, until it's a time for you to just go to your next life. And sometimes the idea of ghosts, most ghosts are just, people may be in that realm, they may be stuck in that realm for a while, but a lot of times, you know, these things which we call ghosts are very benign, they're kind, they're peaceful, and all they really need is just a little bit of assistance, that's all, a little bit of kindness. I don't know why most people don't believe in ghosts. They've never harmed anybody. They can be very helpful. There was one of these friends of mine from Australia. She went to UK once. And, you know, if an Australian goes to UK, they have to go and see that the castles. We don't have any castles in Australia. So she was taken on a tour of one of these castles and the dungeons. She never really believed in ghosts, but it was spooky down there. And when she came out, you know, the tour had finished, she asked the guide, said, you know, are there any ghosts? Have you ever seen any ghosts, you know, in these dungeons? And the guide said, no, never. I've never seen any ghosts in these dungeons. And then the Australian happened to say a stupid thing. He said, "How many years have you worked in this castle?" And the guard said, "Over 300 years." That's a joke. Over 300 years means he was a ghost. That's a lot of the time, if you see a real ghost, you don't know they're much different than an ordinary human being. Many ghosts are like that. But anyway, they're very rare and they're benign. They won't do any harm to you. And usually just when they've... Most ghosts, once they've seen their funeral and everyone is just as happy as they can possibly be, they've done all their jobs, then they feel it's the time for them to leave. So yeah, then those things happen. You've seen that, it does happen. The interesting question which you asked was, can one ghost talk to another ghost? That's kind of rare, but it does happen sometimes. Sometimes, I remember seeing these ghosts over in Thailand, kind of hang out together, not really quite sure what they're supposed to be doing. So they congregate together. That's weird. But anyway, I just add that.
Thank you very much.
Does that answer the question, or do you want to ask more on that? Because...
No.
Yeah. Okay, very good.
Yes, and thank you, Ajahn. Ajahn, I have a question in the chat on a similar topic. Can I read it for you?
Yes, go on.
Thank you. I have heard that the last state of mind in life determines the next rebirth. For example, if you are afraid or worried during your last moments, you will be reborn into a lower realm. Is this true?
Yes.
So, what about the way we have lived before we faced our last state? Please kindly offer me an insight.
Yes. Okay, the last thought is an approximation. And the reason is because it's very hard to say when a person dies, what is the last thought? Death is not an event, not a moment, it's a process. And no doctor knows the exact point when a person died. The death is a process of quite a few minutes. So what is the last thought? And again, it's not the last thought, it's the last states of mind. So you may have a terrible one-moment thought, but then afterwards, what happens next? And a good example of that is people who commit suicide. And that happens a lot. And it makes especially the parents, friends, loved ones of someone who's killed themselves feel just so, it adds salt into the open wound. They think that somebody has killed themselves, they must have had some terrible thoughts, and now they're going to be in hell realm for years or decades or centuries or something. That is really unfair, and it doesn't work that way. You don't judge a life by just the last moments. It's the whole of the life. So a person may have some bad moments, when they are dying, especially if it's a suicide. Then afterwards, hopefully, if there's really good people around, you can actually basically keep talking to them, giving them lots of good energy and kindness. Say, yeah, it's not a good way to die, but never mind, you've done a lovely life, a beautiful life. So you always remind people of the beautiful things they've done in their life. And if they still linger around, which they often do, to funeral services, and you say the beautiful things which they've achieved in their life, remind them. And that will actually take those beings who have passed away into a much better rebirth. They're still around, when people do their funeral services. Sometimes people can see them or feel them or smell them. This is not just human beings. Even there's a couple of cases of dogs. There's one famous story from Perth. This woman who was, this is not a joke, this is a real story. This woman who was didn't have a partner left a long time ago, didn't have any children. The love of her life was her dog. And they would always take the dog on a walk every morning, every evening. And then one day, actually this story was told to me in the old Armadale group, because she used to go there one day, that she was playing with a dog in the forest above, I think, Rolling Stone, and she lost her ring, a finger ring. They searched everywhere for it, but could not find it. A ring in a forest is too hard to find. So they went back home. She always missed the ring, but a few days later, the dog died. And she was more concerned with the grief for her dog than anything else. And she told me that in her house, she was there alone, she could hear the dog barking many times in her house. But she could never see it. It was like in another room. And she would run to that room, open the door, no dog to be seen. But she could hear it very clearly. And then eventually, the one day, she was at the inside of the front door of her house. She heard the dog on the other side of the front door, just a few inches away, but the other side of the door. So she opened the door very quickly. She couldn't see the dog. But she saw in the middle of the welcome mat to her front door was the finger ring she'd lost a few days earlier. And at that, she never heard the dog again. The dog had fulfilled its purpose. One last thing to do, you know, to her friend, you know, this human being who lost its ring, find that ring and bring it back to her, which this ghost dog did. And that's a true story. It's beautiful. Even dogs can be, you know, ghosts or spirits or whatever you call them, and just, you know, fulfill their duties, and then just they can pass on into a new life.
Thank you, Ajahn. And John, Gloria would like to unmute and ask you a question. Gloria?
Good, yeah.
Yes, my question is that yesterday night when I was doing like loving kindness meditation, I have these weird feelings like I can feel spirits around. I feel weird talking about that, but I can like sort of like feel spirit or like kind of, I don't know how to say, but like that kind of thing. And then I go to look up in the sutta, and then it states that the benefits of loving kindness, one of them is that you will be pleased by the spirit. I don't remember the exact wording, but it's something like that. And then I saw there's another one that said, like fire, poison, and weapon will not injure you.
Yeah.
And then with that, I feel like it doesn't make sense, because when fire burns, you will obviously be burnt. And then if someone like hurt you with a knife, you will obviously be hurt. And then I'm wondering, what does that mean? Yeah, thank you.
Okay. So, as one of my disciples over in Sri Lanka, he told me about this experiment he did. And at last he actually sent the video of it. I asked him many times. He has one disciple who's a very, very good meditator, very skillful, and he can get into these jhanas so easily. So when his disciple got into one of these deep meditations, this, you know, the disciple who was leading this group, he was a doctor. So he got out a scalpel. And on his shoulder, this Sri Lankan man's shoulder, he disinfected the area and got out his scalpel and tried to make an incision on this man's shoulder. And there was a proper doctor, it was a real scalpel, and he videoed it. And the scalpel would not penetrate the skin. And so, you know, he just stopped trying. The video was finished. And then when the fellow came out, only then did the doctor tell him what he'd done. Did he feel anything? He said, no, didn't feel anything. And so then the doctor tried something else for the experiment. He said, would you mind if I try this again? He said, okay, not at all, because they trusted each other. So this Sri Lankan man went into a deep meditation again. The doctor got out the scalpel, did the disinfection of the area, and actually made an incision with the scalpel, because he had permission. And then just cleaned it up, sewed up a couple of stitches, and then put a bandage on. And when the man came out, you know, he didn't feel any pain during the incision. He could feel a bit of smarting on that part of his shoulder. But it actually showed something which you've heard before, but actually proved it. That in deep meditation, you are invulnerable. And then you can't be cut. And he did that just to try it out and prove it. And there's all these other stories of, you know, you may have heard me say these stories. I love collecting them because I was a theoretical physicist before, and weird stuff really interests me. About one of these monks, he was an Indonesian monk, he's dead now, but he meditated in the jungle in Java, and he was actually underwater for about 6 or 7 days. He didn't know anything about it because he was in deep meditation in a jhana. You can't drown. And in the time of the Buddha, there was this one monk. This is the story of in the Buddha's time. And he was meditating so peacefully in the jungle, and people, a couple of villagers, you know, looking for mushrooms in the jungle, thought he was dead, and thought, you know, he's a venerable monk. I can't just leave this monk to be bitten, to be eaten by the jungle animals, so we should cremate him. They were in the jungle, so they could get wood very easily. They got a pyre, put the venerable monk on top, set it on fire, and once the fire was established, they went off to just collect their mushrooms or whatever. And this is how the Buddha said it. The following morning, they were very surprised to see that monk walk into their village for alms food. He was totally alive, and even his robes were not burnt. So these deep meditations, amazing things happen. So the difference between somebody who is in deep meditation and they're invulnerable from fire, from cutting or from floods, is their body is still warm. So if you find anyone of this Armadale group meditating and you can't see them breathing, just touch their body. If they're still warm, please don't send them to the crematorium yet. Otherwise they'll give heart attacks to everybody else. Yeah, thank you.
Ajahn, I've got another comment in the chat
go on.
For you, if I could read it.
Yes,
you recently, Ajahn, in one of the sessions you offered in Singapore, you said to give freely, always not expecting.
Yeah.
How do we do this when others close to you expect you to enjoy worldly things like watching TV, etc.? How can we balance this in our lives together?
You know, after a while, you can talk to your loved ones and you say, well, please, you can look at TV, but I prefer to look at my mind, go to my room, do some meditation. Because after a while, you become a better husband, a better wife, a better son, daughter, parent, if you meditate more. And if you're not becoming a better family member, you're not doing the meditation correctly. Usually everybody loves people when they meditate. So often in that Armadale group years ago where we would meet in this little room in the hospital, that many women would come up and say, I never felt like coming to meditation tonight. I was sent by my kids. The kids would say to Mummy, you have to go to meditation tonight. No, I'm too tired. Mummy, you must go. No, I like to just stay at home. Mummy, go to meditation. Why, darling? Because you're a much nicer mummy when you come home from meditation. And then the honesty of kids is wonderful. You know, they really meant that. So if, you know, you're really meditating well, they would just say, oh, please, go off to meditate. We'll just watch the TV. You can join in a little bit, but a lot of times you are just doing that to help others. to make them feel. I can remember going to see my mother a couple of times. I would sit down and watch the TV with her just for company. And I just couldn't believe it. I hadn't watched the TV for years. And I think there was one sort of TV show there, and I was just counting how many people were killed just in half an hour. Couldn't believe it, how violent these TV shows were. But anyway, that's what we can do. But try to be kind to others. Compromise as much as you can without spoiling, you know, your own peace of mind.
Well, Ajahn, it's come time to wind up. We've had over 16 different countries here this evening with over 50 people. So
excellent.
It's been an excellent evening. So thank you, Ajahn. Ajahn, would you like to offer us a blessing?
Oh, yeah, sure. Very nice to see you all. So this is a blessing for each one of you, even those ones I cannot see. Sabo go inimuto, Sabo santa po wajito, Sabo vera mati gando, Nibuto chatu wangpoa, Sabiti o iwa chantu, Sabogo inasatu mate, Bowan wantarayo, Suki diga yugo poa, Api wadan hasilitsanichang, Wuta pachalino, Chataro dhamma watanti, Ayuano sukhang balang. Very good. So wishing you all happiness and well-being. And see you next time. Bye.
And bye, Ajahn. And thank you very much.
My pleasure. See you all.
Thank you,
Ajahn. Bye.
Thank you,
bye. Bye. Bye, everybody.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bye bye. 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 Okay, great.